Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the House Finance meeting to order. Today, Tuesday, February 7th at 2 o'clock. And let's see, with us is Representative Moses, Representative Holland, Representative Foster, myself, Representative Meyer, Representative Jewell, Representative Hawker, and there's a couple people been excused, and others will join us as we go along here. Okay, so today we have a presentation by the Alaska Minerals Commission, is that correct?
Yes.
Irene Anderson.
I'm Irene Anderson.
Okay, and we'll have Carl Hanneman, is that correct? Yes. Okay, and Rich Haig, is that? Yep. Okay, very good. Well, I'll turn it over to you folks, the presenters. And
okay, thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. And we come from different parts of Alaska, and we'll go around and introduce ourselves. I am Irene Anderson from Nome, Alaska, and I've known Richard, I guess, since before I was born. So I'm glad to be here and see my representative, Carl.
Carl Hanneman, Fairbanks.
Rich Hughes, Fairbanks.
Rich High from Udall.
Greg Fleischer from Anchorage.
Lance Miller from Udall.
Barbara Coyley, Fairbanks.
Neil McKinnon, Udall.
Y'all Adams, Fairbanks.
Okay, great, yeah. All over the state.
Okay, and Carl will take the lead in giving our presentation. You have in front of you a copy of the presentation and a copy of the Minerals Commission report.
It doesn't have to be right.
And in about a half hour, two of us need to be excused to go to another appointment. So thank you for this time.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I appreciate the chance to discuss some of these issues today with you that are important to the mining industry in Alaska. As Irene said, you've been provided a copy of the Minerals Commission report. In it contains a whole number of issues that are important to the mining industry. I'd like to first give you a little background about the Minerals Commission itself. It was created by the legislature in 1986, and we are authorized through 2014. Appointed by the governor, speaker, and president of the Senate. Our charge is to give you and the administration recommendations on how to improve the mining industry. We've been doing that since 1987, and we just might recall that at that time when the Minerals Commission was formed, there was only one mine in Alaska, and that was the Usabelli coal mine. There were no hard rock mines at that time. And the state of Alaska has come a long ways through this joint effort in developing the industry. Just to summarize the industry for you, we're comprised of three different categories, you know, exploration, development, and production. You can see that we cycle through some peaks and valleys here in the boom times and lean times in exploration, certainly over the years. Same thing with development. As the major mines have come on in Alaska, but when you combine those together and look at the overall industry value, we're on a steadily increasing a total overall value, which in last year then totaled about $1.6 billion. The mines that have come on are located in geographic diverse areas of the state. We got Red Dog up in northwest Alaska, of course Usabelli in central Alaska, Fort Knox near Fairbanks, and Greens Creek down by Juneau. But there are other significant developing projects out there as well. The one I'm involved in, Pogo, which is near production, Rock Creek out by Nome, Nixon Fork, Donlin Creek out in the Kuskokwim, and the Pebble Project down in southwest Alaska. Jordan Nicole in South Central near Anchorage, and then the Kensington Project in Southeast. So that just this map is important to recognize that when we're talking about the mineral industry in Alaska, we're talking about an opportunity, a very rare opportunity, to provide economic development in diverse areas of Alaska. And hopefully through working with you and implementing some of these recommendations, we can continue to foster the growth of that industry. Some of our recommendations, and certainly the Finance Committee will deal with the taxation issues, and the recommendations that we've pulled out of the report today, we just want to focus on just a few key issues that relate primarily to finance issues. But I thought I might first kind of summarize the existing taxation regime for the mining industry in Alaska. We have a mining license tax. It was enacted by the territorial legislature in 1913. It was certainly an important discussion of the resource policy at statehood. It was established as 7% net profits tax for major operations. And this is payable by all operations in the state, regardless of their land status or location. And that's a very unique element for a taxation program in Alaska. We also have mining rents and royalties. Again, was a major part of the discussion at statehood about how to appropriately obtain resource values from mineral development in Alaska. 1981, the state AG questioned the state policy whether the taxation regime at the current time was appropriate and in accordance with Section 6I of the Statehood Act. So in 81 and 82, the legislature tried a modification, tried some legislation that didn't resolve the problem. In fact, it went to multi-year litigation, 1983 through 1987. And in 1987, the Supreme Court ruled that either rents or royalties were in fact required under the state constitution. And so in response to that, the legislature imposed kind of a belt and suspenders approach and imposed both rents and royalties to resolve that issue. And so that establishes rents on mining claims of a certain amount per year. Per acre, as well as royalties, which is 3% of net profits, applies, of course, only to state land, and that's a big distinction between that and the mining license tax. But real key for your consideration is that this debate and the resolution about this issue, the 6I issue, and what was the appropriate taxation on the mining industry, occurred prior to the industry expansion. That, you know, Supreme Court case was in 1987. That's before we had major hard rock mines in Alaska. And that's really, as I think, tax policy should be, establishment in advance of development so that the industry can grow and prosper under stable conditions. Then we see here a chart of showing the growth of the value of mineral production. That's actually what gets taxed in Alaska. It's not the exploration, it's not the development expenditures. And while those provide good jobs in rural Alaska, you know, it's the actual mineral production that is subject to tax. And you can see here with the different increments and growth in the industry, those increments come as a result of us bringing on the new major mines in Alaska. First Red Dog and Greens Creek in the 89 period, and then Fort Knox, you know, in the 96 period. And you notice this last increase there with 2004, and we'll show again in 2005 an even substantially greater increase, is just a result of prices, world markets improving product prices for the things that Alaska produces, which is copper, silver, gold, lead, and zinc, of course. And in fact, that here's some pricing chart showing that early on, when the mines were in feasibility and construction stage, the price of metals were, in the case of zinc, was over 70 cents, and those were kind of the feasibility levels. And the prices and profitability of the operations have never really lived up to that billing through the, you know, first decades of these operations. But in the last few years, certainly with improving world markets, these operations are now, in fact, improving in profitability. And so as a result, we see growing payments from industry. The bottom line here is kind of a stable and steady growth in payments to municipalities. Those are payments in lieu of taxes or property taxes in the case of Fairbanks or Juneau. And often these projects are the largest taxpayers or close to the largest taxpayers in their associated municipality. Then there's state rents and royalties, which is these fixed unit prices per acre or per ton of coal. And the last chart, you can see the white line, white bar on top. You can see in 2003-2004 a substantial increase in the state mining license tax and income taxes paid, which will be mirrored again in a larger amount in 2005. So kind of with that backdrop, I'd like to just then go through a couple of the key issues, recommendations from the Minerals Commission with respect to finance. First, tax considerations, geological and geophysical mapping, which requires appropriation, and AMRA. On the tax considerations, certainly stability in Alaska is a key element. We've seen that mineral development can occur in remote areas of Alaska and provide good jobs in diverse areas of the state. But a substantial portion of the state still is an unorganized borough. And in those areas, the potential formation of boroughs presents extreme uncertainty with regard to future taxation. Certainly with respect to the POGA project, the one that I'm involved in near Delta Junction, the potential formation of a borough presented a very challenging hurdle in our financial analysis because we didn't know. We have now worked to resolve that through a payment in lieu of tax agreement. But we need to look at other parts of the state and how we might be able to provide improved certainty. Certainly the mining industry is willing to pay its share of the tax burden based on a broad-based, equitable type of a tax arrangement, but not an industry-specific tax. Industry-specific taxes, we feel, would be disincentive to investment, disincentive to development in the rural areas, just the type of development that we're trying to encourage, and thereby is negative. And certainly the tax uncertainty makes investment decisions difficult. In some of these projects that we have ahead now in the industry, they're multi-billion dollar investments, and this uncertainty is a very difficult environment with which to invest. So as to a recommendation on the tax consideration side, we just ask that the legislature and the governor, work with the industry to improve the investment climate by looking at this issue of the uncertainty associated with the municipal taxation in the unorganized areas. There has been some discussion and proposals set forth and circulated, and the Minerals Commission just recommends that you engage and try to come up with an approach that results in a broad-based, equitable, and stable tax regime for the industry. Second recommendation with respect to geological and geophysical mapping and findings, we know that Alaska has one of the poorest map coverages in the world. There are many third world countries that have a better database than Alaska. This discourages investors. It doesn't provide a baseline on which kind of successive improving geologic exploration can occur. We've been spending about $400,000 per annum, and only 6% of the state's land entitlement so far has been mapped. So we have a long ways to go. Fortunately, the governor does have an increment in the budget for geologic mapping. A portion of this is on along the pipeline corridor between the interior and the Canadian border. But we're recommending that they add an increment to that to do the geologic mapping associated with that. They've done airborne work now. They've flown it, but they need to get on the ground and actually develop the geologic maps that the industry and others can use to kind of allow the work and the effort that's been spent to date to be meaningful. So we recommend that we increase the level of funding to at least $1 million per year, as well as provide $500,000 to complete the surficial and bedrock geologic mapping from the Delta Junction to Canadian border. That's important to make the product that is produced out of this particular corridor mapping equal to what's been done in other parts of the state and be consistent in terms of geologic mapping. AMREF is a industry government partnership that supports resource education. It's an excellent tool. We've been working with this kit for many years to try to improve resource education in our state schools. The state did fund an AMREF position within the Department of Education to develop curriculum, but we need to continue that and move forward, and so we're recommending that $100,000 be appropriated to support that AMREF program. So in your report, there's a number of other recommendations. Some of them are listed here. One I'd like to highlight and discuss with you as well is the NPDES primacy program. Last year, the legislature directed the agency to proceed down that path. We think that's the right way to go. The Alaska Minerals Commission has recommended that. But I just might highlight and ask for your attention that the appropriate appropriation be made to continue that effort so that DEC can develop a sound program and assume that program from the EPA in a timely fashion. Might also point out some of these issues are not directly state issues. They're in the report, don't relate to things that the federal government and how the state might work with the federal government to improve the investment climate in Alaska. Those items are listed here and in your report. And might just summarize then by showing that if we continue to provide stable policy and stable fiscal policy and good regulatory policy, the industry has a lot of growth potential. Things that we've identified, projects that are out there of Pebble, Donlin Creek, Rock Creek, Big Rock, Kensington, Nixon Fork, show that the industry over the next decade could approximately double. And we look forward to working with you to make that happen. So with that, we'd be certainly take any questions you might have.
Very good. Good presentation. Any questions from the committee members? Representative Kelly, welcome to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Carl. Just a question on the mixing zones. You've seen what the government was going to do, kind of the pullback, some of the things that are going on. Give us a little bit of your
Well, there's a recommendation in the report with respect to mixing zone, and it certainly advocated for the opportunity to provide for mitigation and kind of science to determine whether a mixing zone was or wasn't appropriate, and the commission would stand by that recommendation.
Could you state your name, please? And
Charlotte McKay.
Okay, and your affiliation?
With the Minerals Commission and Bristol Environmental Consulting.
Okay, now you can proceed.
Thank you. With the mixing zones not being more restrictive than we had anticipated, there's an increased need for the other water quality regulations to be fixed, so that natural background criteria, which don't sufficiently address naturally mineralized waters, and stream classification that has a lot of waters classified as cleaner than they naturally are, those need to be fixed because there's less other regulatory tools to address those at this point.
So, yeah, I guess, are we headed for trouble on this, or? I think we are, but you guys sound happier than I thought you might be.
They're just happy people.
Don't mischaracterize my response.
That's why I'm digging on you a little.
The potential mining projects that are ahead of the industry now in the next decade. will likely need additional regulatory flexibility than what is provided for in the regulations that are, we understand, soon to be adopted. And then Charlotte speaks to that, is if it's not going to be a mixing zone, then there needs to be some other science-based evaluation of real versus perceived impacts to make sure that any real impacts are in fact properly mitigated to allow those projects to proceed.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks, Representative Hopper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you again. Glad to have you here. And I'm really glad to see your pill worked out up there. I can imagine. Yeah. I just came from a meeting, that's why I was a little bit delayed here, with some other folks in the sort of the business end of the development community in the state. And here we say, I got a very strong argument for cutting the budget. The business development community is saying, this budget has got way too much spending in it. It's absolutely not acceptable to Alaska's business community. And I see here, again, you're asking for a fair amount of discretionary spending. Can you reconcile the two positions?
Well, yes. In the context of historical spending, what the Alaskan Minerals Commission is recommending now is not a significant increment. Certainly the geologic mapping from a average level of $400,000 to $1 million is an increase, but the our prime recommendation, for example, with respect to tax considerations, would not take a substantive fiscal note, but that would establish, we think, good policy to help attract business. So we're not here just asking for appropriation.
No, thank you. I guess just the point is that, in fact, I was usually mapping, for example, the $600,000 increment. I just had a very strong, very, very strong presentation to me by, again, resource development business leaders that said, we are spending way too much money. We need to go back to our baseline budget. And I find that a little inconsistent coming from the same, the same folks. I'm just wondering, I'm needing help reconciling that. Everybody comes before us and asks for additional spending, but yet your trade organizations come to me and insist that we cut the budget.
Did you have a response or a comment?
Well, maybe Greg.
So, Greg Bleicher, worked for Bristol Environmental, a Bristol Bay Native Corporation owned subsidiary. In terms of mapping the state, when the state makes an investment in that, there's an immediate economic benefit because it immediately draws interest of companies that are willing to spend money here in Alaska. And so it's a rather small investment, but that comes back to the state many, many times over. And so I believe those sorts of expenditures are very well justified.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Richard Foster.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming here today. I look forward to your presentations every year. You've got here on RS 2477, there's been a recent 10th Circuit's case ruling that is favorable to acknowledging the existence of RST. What, can you go into that a little bit more? To me, that's still good news, but I don't know how good a news that is or what the impact would be. That's page 5 on the bottom.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm not personally familiar with that, so I'll have to get back to you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know you've been working on that for so many years. This has been going on for
right.
at least 15 years, and it's such a slow, slow, frustrating process that any news is I think Bryce Construction would probably need to move their equipment to some of the other things.
Okay. Yes.
Just Carl, I'd like to get with you on the, because we've got some legislation that's floating around, I'd like to get with you on the mixing zone thing a little bit to get a little bit more perspective on some specific legislation. So hope you can help with that, because it's in play right now, and we've got to be careful. We had some real drain damage when we had water having to go back into the creek cleaners and they pulled it out, so we've had years of that insanity, and I just want to make sure we don't worsen something here when we've got a chance to be careful. So I'll talk to you later in a minute.
Appreciate your concern.
Is it Hanneman? I'm sorry.
Hanneman. It's fine.
Hanneman.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just listen to your book here. You mentioned a little bit about taxation. How does Alaska compare to other states, other countries? Obviously, we're competing with Canada, I'm sure, for your investment dollars. Can you give us some insight? Are we too much? Not enough? You'd never admit it, but it's not enough.
Well, there have been some studies produced that have looked at that over the years. I think Alaska is somewhere in the middle. And that's not a bad place to be. But I think looking at the history of that, especially the 6i issue and what we went through in the litigation of that and the many years of that, I think it's just important to keep that in perspective as we look ahead.
As you probably know, we're looking at the oil taxes now and trying to give tax credits for those oil companies that reinvest back into the state. Would something like that work in the mining industry?
The legislature passed several years ago a exploration incentives credit bill that has actually been viewed extremely favorable by the industry, and it helped, instigate a lot of exploration in Alaska, and even more importantly, it was repeated many times in different conferences by mining industry leaders and executives that it sent the right message that Alaska was open for business, trying to encourage the mining industry, and that's still out there, still active, and still understood to be a very credible incentive toward exploration to try to find additional deposits in Alaska. So the message was certainly well received prior.
Mm-hmm. Great. Glad to hear that. The other thing, okay, you can join us. Let me just go on to another question and we'll come back to
Mr. Chairman, if I can speak today.
Go ahead.
My name is Rich High. I'm with Queens Creek and a member of the Minerals Commission. I think, one of the things that we have to remember from a tax standpoint is that there are essentially only four, large operating mines in the state of Alaska. The ones that Carl mentioned, and of course Carl's mine, itself, Pogo, coming on in the near future. And if we take a look at the mining industry in general, we also, we didn't mention the corporate income tax that is paid by corporations in the state. We talked about the 3% state rent, as well as the minerals license tax. The mining industry in general is seeing quite good times right now. They have in the last 2 years. On average, the mining industry has a rate of return of about 5%. It's not a high rate of return industry. It's very capital intensive. It takes many years to bring a project on from initiation of exploration to being able to produce a metal. So from the standpoint of tax levels, I guess the Minerals Commission believes that the, you know, the tax regime that exists now is fair on the mining industry.
That's good. Thank you for that explanation, and I appreciate that, because I think a good example in your mind, it's also very litigated industry, it seems like, because aren't you currently at a stock order or stock?
No, market? That's Kensington. I'm the other line.
Sorry.
Green Street.
Thank you. Sorry. Yeah, my mind's mixed up. Well, can you guys, do you have a slide that shows, you know, the Turk, because we're all interested in providing jobs for our constituents. That would show the, there it is, employment growth. What, and that's almost 5,000?
Right, that shows, you know, that's the projection if these other major projects come to fruition, which will take a combination of good investment and regulatory climate and good geology and product prices, but...
So you're seeing a ramp up then in the next, like this year it looks like, and then a drop and then another increase in 8 and 9?
Correct.
Okay. Why the drop off in 7?
The, that's a combination of just all the projects. Rich might be able to explain that.
I prepared, my name's Rich Hughes, I'm staff for the Minerals Commission. I prepared these graphs. The ramp up, the blue total line, and the vermilion increase is development expenditures.
No, he's talking about
the
The
drop off is a curtailment in the development of Pogo. So that when they curtail their construction activity, that would curtail the construction employees.
So you're more of a production mode than you are a construction mode.
It combines both construction and production, but so it reflects both. But when a mine's construction period is over, then it becomes production. It generally drops off significantly in numbers.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. And I'm assuming... careful. You know, you guys can work from the mine and never have an accident when you come here.
Put your mouth here. Right here.
We're a hard hat here.
I'm assuming, too, then your local hire rate is good. I like 99%.
Well, I wouldn't claim that it's 99%, but.
Well, maybe yeah, Red Dog. You're pretty close, aren't you, Reggie?
Probably mid-50s, close to 60%.
Local?
I think that's Nana's shareholder hire numbers.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what we consider local.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I wasn't sure if the chairman was...
I met all Alaska employees.
Yeah.
Alaska. What would it be for statewide? Alaska residents hired to work there.
That's my question. Yeah.
Yeah.
3%.
I believe it right now. It used to be upper 80s statewide.
Yeah, there's a report that's going to be released tomorrow on that was done to summarize the mining industry employment, and I just have in 2003 it has shows about 83%.
Okay.
But it's a challenge. Workforce development, certainly in the mining industry, certainly in our project, you know, the Pogo project, underground mining, it's a challenge. That, you know, it's not a trade with which there's a lot of experience in Alaska, and so we're working hard on the training and Alaska hire efforts.
Okay, that's good. Representative Joel has a question, but let me follow up on the training. How are you doing this training? Is it through the high schools or through the unions? Or
well, there's an entity in Delta called the Delta Mine Training Center, and we work in cooperation with them. They work in cooperation with the Department of Labor, you know, the State Department of Labor, and they've got quite a unique underground mine training center that's just east of Delta. And provides an opportunity to do hands-on underground mine training.
Okay.
But recruiting people into that training program is a challenge in itself.
First comment, then a question, I guess, with regards to the training. I know at the tech center in Kotzebue, initially the Red Dog training was taking place in at the Aptec in Seward, and because of the remote location and far away from home and all of that stuff, the success rate was at about 30%, right at the tail end. People were dropping out like flies or getting into trouble because some of the social environment. Then when we moved it up to the tech center in Kotzebue, switched around to about 80% successful, and those people going to work and being there long term, probably still working today. So I think a lot of that kind of training where you can do it close and take a close look at the social environment is going to have a huge impact on your rates of success. but my question, I guess, is to whether or not the School of Mines in Fairbanks is meeting your needs in terms of, I mean, we can get most of the grunt work done somewhere, but, you know, and that's for the probably the 65% up to, but after that you need a certain level of education as opposed to vocational training to begin to get in there. And is the School of Mines providing that through the University of Alaska?
Well, there's a recommendation in here, in fact, to help solidify and strengthen the School of Mines by establishing a special professor chair that would help guide both the oil and mining industry you know, over the next few years, you know, while the legislature here is, there's some challenges in, you know, implementing recommendations through the university leadership, we'd certainly encourage your support for them to fill that chair and get that special professorship established to help demonstrate that the School of Mines and the petroleum industry and the mining industry are important to Alaska, and that it's something the state's committed to, and that they intend to provide for quality education at that advanced level. We have three or four mining engineers or environmental engineers working on our project from the University of Alaska. Right now we're looking for two more, and we can't find them, you know, but it's also, certainly a niche education as well that is not going to attract large numbers, but it's certainly, we need to have a quality program.
Okay. Representative Hawk? I think just segueing off your point there, you know, university chairs are, you know, quite typically endowed by, you know, the interest in beneficiary groups. So, I think the mining industry would be interested in endowing that chair.
There has been some discussion about that. In fact, during the reorganization of the school, the short-term versus long-term funding of that was discussed. And I know there's an advisory group that's working with the university on that issue.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for anyone? Person help?
Yeah. Thank you for being here, Carl. It's nice to see you again. I was just curious, you talked a little bit in your presentation about taxation in boroughs and non-boroughs. How are your negotiations with the newly formed or trying to be newly formed Deltana borough? How's that going with you? Are you actively participating with them with POGO?
Well, TechPogo has signed a payment in lieu of tax agreement with the city of Delta Junction, which will be assumed by a borough, the Deltana borough, if in fact the borough is formed. So that was signed in November of 2005 and provides for a schedule of payments and a taxation structure that would go forward through mine production. If in fact a borough is formed. So at this time we are the public process of proceeding toward a vote of that borough is ongoing. We have pledged our support of borough formation if the voters choose to do so, but it, at this time is up to their election.
And if they don't, then we take in the Fairbanks North Star borough. Is that the idea?
If they don't,
you don't have to answer.
if they don't, we'll evaluate whether it's good state policy to allow a borough like that to take Pogo as an asset.
Fine. It's fine. Thanks for your answer.
Richard Kelly.
When you pour the first answer.
Well, we're working hard. We'd hope to be able to do that by now, but we are. Our target has been first quarter 2006, and we'll certainly make that. It's a matter of the days, or certainly within the month.
Good news.
Great. So you'll give us each a gold bar as soon as you start producing.
Well,
just kidding.
Yes, go ahead, Richard. I have a question. I'm not sure if you're the right organization to ask this question, but I'll give it a shot anyway. When you know an area at some point may come online, are there, and I think I know the answer to this, but I just wonder about the efforts to work with the local area, the local communities, the local governments, to get them warmed up to the concept, because most of them, there starts to be a conflict between potential subsistence uses of the area and also the questions around jobs. And I'm just wondering how much prep work goes into community, developing community relationships and getting local support.
Well, I mean, you raised valid concerns, and certainly, you know, as mines develop and exploration occurs, there's a lot of education and communication that has to happen. Different projects approach it differently. Different projects have different problems and challenges, but I know that some projects, including ours, spent many years and a lot of time in the communities in advance of permitting, in advance of development, trying to foster that communication. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes there are different challenges. Each project is different. But I think that as the industry matures in Alaska and we demonstrate that you can have mining in an environmentally sound manner, I think it'll get easier to share that message, and people see the tangible benefits of jobs and kind of stable employment, those kind of things. But they're hard issues. I mean, they're real issues in terms of the subsistence and the rural issues. But hopefully, by leading through example, whether it's Red Dog or these Donlin projects that have, you know, have a high rate of local hire, they help share the message internally as well. And I know they're working very hard at it.
Okay. Very good. Anything, any other questions? So we've got all the experts here, it looks like. If not, thank you very much for your presentation. And
you have our contacts if you have any additional questions or if things can come up, like clarification of issues, we'd be happy to respond.
Okay, we will certainly do that. And again, thank you for taking the time to present this to us, and good luck on all your projects.
Thank you.
With that, let's see. We do have that's all we have today. We are going to meet tomorrow. One correction. The DVDs and monitors and motor vehicles, we won't be hearing that tomorrow. That is House Bill 12. But we will be hearing House Bill 273, which is the PFD payment, delayed payment for allowable absences. So it'll be just that bill. And then also I think the Representative's Veterans Plate bill that we heard previously, we'll bring that up again too. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Not, we're adjourned.
Thank you.